Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for September 9th, 2018. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to review the U.S. Open. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up for the upcoming Australian Open, Parsa, which is only 4.5 months away, but you can get your tickets and packages all set for that. So my friend, welcome. Thank you again for joining us this week.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
And everybody out there, I mean, what an entertaining and drama-filled U.S. Open we had this year, Parsa. We had heat.
A lot of drama.
Yeah, we had heat. We had humidity. We had the umpires almost taking center stage. We had old champions, new champions, you know, upstarts, everything under the sun, literally, and under the roof. And, you know, the Grand Slam season has finally come to an end. Our grind of, you know, from basically Indian Wells to the end of the U.S. Open, which ends today, is over. So we can take a little bit of a break after this and get ready for Shanghai next month. But Parsa, I mean, we got, you know, quite a bit to recap for today. Got to jump right into the women's final, which was dominated by 20-year-old Japanese star Naomi Osaka. Amazing effort, taking out 23-time major winner Serena Williams. But I mean, wow, what a second set there. I mean, I was on CTV News today, you know, a national channel we have here in Canada. Basically, I was recapping that for everybody. And I mean, I think you got a little bit of a different take than I do.
Yeah.
So why don't you, you know, tell everybody what you thought about the whole situation, and then I'll jump in and give everybody my two cents.
Yeah, I mean, here's, you know, everyone's quick to judge to Serena Williams. I happen to have played quite a few matches. I'm not proud of it, but I've taken chairs and thrown them onto the middle of the court because I was so upset at a referee. So who am I to start judging Serena Williams under that sort of microscope because she called someone a thief? I mean, give me a break. Let's be real, everybody out there. So whether she's right or wrong, or she lost her emotional control or whatever, how many of us out there are going to feel this way when there's $3.8 million on the line and some dude in a chair, you didn't even say anything that bad. I mean, thief, okay. Like, how many times have I called someone, hey, you know, you took something from me. What, you're going to take a game penalty at 4-3 in the second set down and say you're virtually... Now, she wasn't going to win anyway. Let me make that very, very clear. Mm-hmm. I don't believe she was going to win. I think it was an 85% that chance that Osaka was going to win at that point.
Yeah.
By giving the game penalty, it became like a 95% chance that Osaka was going to win. And why? Why should a referee have any sort of factor in what's happening? Nothing happened that was that bad. Just relax. She took her point penalty. She didn't even understand that there was a coaching warning or whatever. And, you know, this is firsthand stuff, Nima. I was in Arthur Ashe in the bowl. You so kindly knew Serenko's agent. And so I got some tickets with my son. Was very close. You can't hear a single thing that's being said down there in the bowl. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. It's so loud. It's just so... And then just take it into a final, and it's all that buzz and all that's going on. You can see how, with that feeling, things get misconstrued and misunderstood. And so she was offended. She got emotional. She was threatened. Whatever it is, her character was questioned. And then, you know, if she would have said, like, you mother, okay, you know, I'm going to shove the ball down your throat and all this kinds of stuff. Like, okay, I can see a game penalty there, you know, all right. You know, but you're a thief? Like, okay. I mean,
Yeah.
my own son, he's 4 years old. He like says, "You're gonna go to jail. Like, what am I gonna do? Like take away a tennis match from him because I
Yeah.
that makes no sense. Like, you have to know your place and know your position.
Okay.
And there are times to enforce yourself. He could have brought her up to the chair and said, "Listen, just so you know, the next thing that has to happen is it's going to be a game penalty."
Sure.
You can give a warning there. You can
Okay.
de-escalate a situation. And he did such a poor job of doing that. His judgment was extremely poor in the moment. And I put that on the referee. Do I blame the player for losing their cool and whatever? I do. Do I blame a player more who's going on a tirade like myself, who throws a chair onto the middle of the court? Absolutely. That's my fault. I went into the red zone.
Okay.
Serena was close to the red zone, but that's not the red zone. So that's how I have it.
Okay, so this is my question for you. Ultimately, because we know Mohamed Lianni's obviously we love him, and he got down from the chair earlier in the event, and he was telling Kyrgios, like, I know you're a great player and I like you a lot and I want you to do better. Come on, let's go get, you know what I mean? Okay. So Carlos Ramos is not that type of guy. Very clean cut. He's one of the best umpires in the world, has a clean cut record, everything. So why do you think he did what he did? Let's just start with that. Why, like,
Because it's very, very clear, Nima, she was pressing him. She was being rude.
okay.
She was saying, "You owe me an apology," and she
Yeah,
kept saying it over and over again.
sure.
And like a little, like he was like, "Oh, you think you're so fancy? Well, here you go, game penalty." Like, step down, dude. Just be quiet.
Yeah.
Like, just sit there, and you have to understand what's at stake here. And you would understand that a player is going to be royally pissed off
Yeah.
that a point even gets taken, which is what this was all about. So like there's needs to be like, so you as the referee are getting paid your X amount of dollars, whether this one wins or that one wins, this one loses, that one loses, it doesn't
Sure.
really matter. Your job there is to try to make the match as clean as possible. So why start to get into what is there? You should be in all effort trying to de-escalate a situation like that, to try to cool her off, to calm her down, let her go through her little tirade, as long as she's not horrifically rude. And oh my goodness, Nima, I'm sure, I don't know your whole life story, but I'm pretty sure you've been called worse than a thief before in your
Yes.
entire life.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Like,
No.
it's like you grow, I can't
Yeah.
say it on the air, but grow a pair of you know what from referee Ramos, and like, come on, man. Seriously. And another thing, and the USTA is my home federation. What's up with the whole, and not that it has to be this way, but why is the female doing the men's match and the man doing the female? Like, what's going on here? Like, please, come on, let's get over this ballyhoo. And like, it just seems too fixed and too clean and too imagey and all this kind of crap that it just, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I want to see Serena go on a tirade. It's entertainment. I was entertained. Someone texted me. I actually wasn't even watching the women's final. Someone texted me and was like, "Are you seeing what's happening?" And then I turned it on, and then I was entertained, and then I liked it. So, everyone's up in arms and jeering and whatever. And the real loser in this scenario was Naomi Osaka, because she was the better player. She was absolutely phenomenal.
Yes.
What a story. Three first rounds in a row. She lost. She goes in there with no confidence, and look at
Yeah.
what she does. That is the real story. And I'm going to sit here right now and I'm going to blame Ramos for ruining that, not Serena Williams. Carlos Ramos, is that his name, or
Yeah.
Albert Ramos?
No, it's Carlos Ramos, yeah.
Carlos Ramos,
Yeah.
he had the ability to just say, "You know what? This woman is being a complete whatever to me, but this is a US Open final. We got to cool it down. Bring up Brian Early. Say, Brian, like, she's really on the borderline. Let Brian Early talk to her. Be like,
Sure.
you need to calm down, blah, blah, blah." Like, there's so many things that are accessible to you besides just putting fuel to the fire and just making it explode, which is what happened. It was completely unnecessary.
So now this is my take on this. Okay, first of all, I want to start right at the beginning, right? This whole thing happened because Patrick Mouratoglou, right? He, you know, and it wasn't alleged. Like, he actually, you know, did some signs where he said, let's move in, whatever. So here's the thing. How do we know that that was the first time that he did that in the match, right? How do we know that was the first time that he coached allegedly Serena? So that's the thing. Like, Carlos Ramos, he's up in the chair. He's looking at these guys. He's looking at Sasha. He's looking at Patrick, the coaches. He's seeing what they're doing. We don't know. And the channel umpire never does an interview after to say, like, this is why I did. They don't need to. They're a person of authority, right? It's just like a judge in court. They're not going to tell you why they made their decision. They've done what they've had to do from an education standpoint, from a certification standpoint, and their decision is final. And that's why they are there, right? And so when the USTA, the ITF, whoever it is, the Grand Slam committee says, listen, Carlos Ramos is going to be the umpire for this match, there's a reason why they're picking
him. He's not doing any more finals, my friend. I'll tell you that right now. Just mark my words.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Maybe not for women's, but I think he'll do men's because he's done, I think, over 20 men's finals.
I think you gotta understand this world, buddy.
Yeah.
No way that guy is going to do anything that's going to be big. Liani is going to be on a short leash. All these guys, you can't. These guys, they are not the show, Nima.
No, you're right. They're not the show. You're not the show. But what I'm saying is that. So that's the first thing. So you know how you're blaming the referee. You got to also blame Mouratoglou. And you know I've done some work with them in the past, and I was very enjoyable. But what's up with Patrick after the match saying, oh, Tony Nadal coaches Rafa all the time and Sasha was coaching Osaka. Like, why is he throwing those guys under the bus? To me, that was not...
I mean, because that's the truth. Honestly, he was just
But that's the truth. There's a million things that are true. We're not sitting out here saying what everybody's dirty laundry is all about, right?
Yeah, he didn't need to bring other people into it.
Especially Tony Nadal. Okay, Sasha, I get it. I mean, the guy was there on the court, and you know that he was in Camp Serena. Maybe he squeezed him out at some point, whatever the case may be. But the point here that I'm coming up with is this. Okay, Serena's had a history of bad behavior in Grand Slam finals and at the U.S. Open. We know what she told the ball, the line judge back in 2009. I think in 2011 she had another problem, and then this year. So she's had that. And she was getting tuned. So that's another reason. And she doesn't want to, she's got a lot of money on the line. You know, Nike, they had some big campaign also for her if she had won the tournament. So there's a lot of stuff at stake, and she knows all of this, right? A lot of money, a lot of prestige. She's trying to tie Margaret Court, pressure, everything, playing against somebody who's, 15, 16, 17 years younger than you. So there's all of these things. And then I agree that Serena never wants coaching. She doesn't even challenge lines. She doesn't, you know, she's just old school. She goes out there and she plays. I'm on her side with that. However, at the end of the day, you can't tell an umpire that you owe me an apology and keep saying it, that you're a thief, and I will guarantee you that you'll never call one of my matches again. Like, you are the player. You don't make those decisions anyways. If for a lot of people who, you know, follow the ATP a couple of years ago...
Are you telling me that LeBron James doesn't dictate things in the NBA? Come on. Look.
Yeah, I get you.
Reality, and then there's, like, reality. You know, did OJ get away with murder? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
There is precedent for
yes.
Now, does it make it right? Absolutely not. So why are they picking on Serena Williams? Is it because she's a woman?
I don't think so personally. I think that the problem here was that they were taking into account Serena's previous, you know, antics at this tournament, especially in the finals. And the coaching thing for me, I think that he should have started off with a soft warning. Say, listen, you know what? I'm seeing Patrick doing some stuff. There's no reason for you. And then she'd be like, I'm not even looking at the guy. Then that would have been done. The racket one, definitely she deserved, right? So she would have at least had one code violation because she smashed her racket. Then, but that's the whole thing. You can't keep egging on the guy and abusing the guy and saying, listen, you owe me an apology. It's like I said, it's like me going to court, Parsa,
and a judge saying to me,
No, but what I'm saying is, no, but you know what though? He's in charge, man. He's in charge of the match. He's in charge of all of the lines, people, the ball crew, and the players. He's
You
calling
think
the
the
score.
fans were happy, the 22,000 people who paid up to $500 on average per ticket, that some low-life referee is determining the end of a match instead of letting the players, who are great champions both in their own right, determine the end of the
No,
match?
but see, I would argue that and say that Serena, that was Serena's call, because you can't do whatever you want just because you have
She
all of
didn't do
these.
anything bad. I mean, give me a break. I mean, that's like,
Yeah,
look,
but
if she throws
listen.
curse words in there, I could
No,
see,
yeah. She
okay.
didn't. She didn't swear. 100%. She didn't swear. I will agree with you on that. But at the end of the day, you got to just, she's like, basically, she put herself in a situation like, I'm Serena Williams. I'm here. I'm putting my hand really high in the air right now, and you're just a referee. And you're over here, kind of like Roddick back in the day, where he was at the Australian Open. He said, "Listen, everybody out there." He said this to the crowd. He goes, "Just make sure you do something with your life, otherwise you'll become a referee." I mean, like, that's just abusive stuff, man. Like, why are you putting the guy down for? Again, the whole situation was unfortunate, and even we've spent,
So then he takes a strike of power and determines the end of a US Open final. Okay, yeah, sure.
yeah, and that's.
He'll never work again, I'm telling you. You can mark her words. She won't be working a final or one of your matches again. That's not happening.
I think that, well, I mean, the ITF really determines that too, right? I don't, I, again, you're right. I mean, she's got a lot of power. There's no question about that. But for me, everybody was kind of at fault here. And the only person who wasn't at fault was Naomi Osaka. And she's, she was the star of this show. And we gotta spend a couple minutes here on her, man, because with all of this controversy and with such a shy demeanor that she has, she got through that. And I put a tweet up that I think is actually, I'm not here to, talk about myself or whatever, but I think it's very relevant because, Parsa, you have a situation where you're playing your idol in your first Grand Slam final. You know what's at stake for her. You know what's at stake for you. You've come through with flying colors. You beat her 2 and 4. Okay, albeit, yeah, a lot of the controversy, the games, the point penalties in the second set. Anyways, you get it done. Then you go into the trophy ceremony where, again, there's more controversy. There's booing, there's this, there's that. Serena's crying, you're crying, and you're already shy. But you get through it. And now the dust has settled. A couple more days are going to go by. And yeah, I think there might be a hangover, like you were saying off air. She might go and lose another 2 or 3 matches first round. This year will end. She'll go to the tour finals because she's the US Open champion, whatever, if she gets enough points. Then she'll get ready for Australia, and we'll see how she does during the Grand Slams next year. But how can it get much worse or much more pressure-filled than this? You know what I'm saying? You're playing your idol. Lot of controversy. I mean, it's never going to be, I don't think you're going to create a match that is that intense as that match, especially with the drama. Especially against such a decorated champion as Serena Williams. Like, if she's playing Muguruza next, it's not going to be the same thing. If she's going to play even Venus, it's not going to be the same thing. Nobody's Serena, right? From all different angles. So for me, overall, this will be, for me, a blessing in disguise for Osaka for the rest of her career. Because I think this will prepare her for absolutely everything that's going to come in her way for hopefully the next 10 or 12 years, as long as she decides to go out there and compete. So I think from that perspective, it's a good call for her. And we'll see how that transpires. But I mean, what a heck of
Yeah,
a.
I mean, I'm under no preset notion with her. That's 8 Grand Slam tournaments, 8 different champions. We've seen this 7 other times where we're having a champion that is a new champion and someone that's the women's game right now. She had just lost 3 first rounds in a row. If you want to look at it mathematically, she's now 7-3 in her last 10 matches. That it's just a it's. This is sometimes the luck of the draw, the way things worked out for her. The court speed was very good for her. She won at Indian Wells. If you remember, Indian Wells is painfully slow. The US Open was painfully slow. So clearly she plays well in a slow, hard court. And everywhere else she struggles. That's just a fact. I'm not going to buy into any of what's happening on the WTA tour yet. She's got a great disposition. She's got a great serve. That's what I thought she did very well. She stepped up to the moment. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
But we've seen Kerber do that. We've seen Sloan Stephens do that last year with some miraculous gets and being deep down in the third set. You know, I'm sure there's going to be players I forget, but Muguruza, we saw her in her Grand Slam triumph. You know, over and over again, you see these kinds of players, the players that are in the moment and in form, they step up. You know, what we haven't seen on the women's tour is someone come out and do what Djokovic has done.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
completely dominated the summer, and he's going to yeah. dominate the fall as well, but that's another conversation.
Sure. And I think, so for me, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how the season ends. Let's see if Serena even plays. I don't even know if she's going to play the rest of the year. Hopefully she does. That would be great to see her out there again, because she's always good for tennis, irrespective of what a lot of people's opinions are after this match, and same with Osaka. But now let's talk about what you just touched on right now, the court speed. So, Parsa, this is what I'm thinking, right? Grand Slams, right? They have, like, the USTA, the French Federation, the LTA, you know, the Australian, you know, Federation. Everybody, Tennis Australia, they have the right to kind of make the court surface also suitable within reason towards benefiting their own players. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? You want to see homegrown winners. You want to see players doing what they're doing. So now this is my question for you. Why would the USTA, when you have a guy like John Isner, right, who has a massive serve and has had a good year, right? You know, somebody like Sloan, who won last year on a faster court. You have Serena, who definitely likes faster courts. Venus, who likes faster courts. Jack Sock, who likes a faster court with his serve. All of these players, TFO, Taylor Fritz, you name it. Why would you make such a slow hard court? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I saw the Tennis Channel thing where they had the tournament director out there, and he was talking about how, you know, it helps to, you know, preserve the courts. Well, that doesn't make sense to me, because you resurface them every year anyways. So that's that part. And you're making hundreds of millions of dollars a year. How much are you really saving? And don't you want to try to make the best possible surface for your players? For me, the court surface was a tad too slow this year, to be quite honest with you. I mean, how many of the matches did we see with more unforced errors than winners?
Yeah, you could have put the ball through the court.
Yeah, and that's what...
And there's too much room in the back, so it makes it even harder to put the ball through the court.
And obviously, it was unfortunate that Nadal had to withdraw against Delpo, but, I mean, he made the semis, and you saw Thiem was probably, from on the men's side, the biggest, you know, like, beneficiary of this type of conditions, where he made the quarters, where he does nothing usually at this tournament, right? And he almost beat Nadal. It was probably one of the best matches you'll ever see, right? 7-6 in the fifth set, 2:30 in the morning, just crazy stuff. Listen, and then even today, right? And because, you know, I was in New York last week, and you couldn't even stand outside. And then today, you don't want to be even outside because it's freezing. So it's like, and then the conditions are so slow, and the court is slow, and the balls are getting puffy, and Delpo's out there trying to hammer his forehand, and nothing's happening. And Djokovic is the best defensive, offensive player, aggressive mover that we've ever seen. I mean, and he's just getting everything back. Return of serves, just like a machine, and we'll get into that in a second. But why would they do this, in your opinion, ultimately? Because it doesn't, if it's the feedback of the players is that we want a slower surface, to me that really doesn't make sense. Well, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think they tried to go for some sort of neutral thing. I think the USA does things sometimes with no rhyme or reason attached to them.
Yeah.
They do them because they feel like it, which is just, you know, I don't know what players they're actually listening to, but, you know, this was a situation where they tried to make it as even of a playing field as possible, and to try to make these long, drawn-out rallies, to try to make the matchups as even as possible. And I think that, you know, you got a couple thrilling matches. I think you get the thrilling matches no matter what. I don't know if the court speed has anything to do with it regardless. There are some people who thought this was a great tournament, Ima. So,
no, it was definitely a great tournament. I can't say that it was probably one of the best U.S. Opens that we've seen in an awful long time. So,
I put that to the court speed because it evens things out.
So my point is not that I necessarily am against it. I'm just saying that if you're the USTA, don't you want to try to help your players? I think.
Well, none of them are going to win, Nima. Come on, let's be real.
Okay, well, so then you know that pretty much closes.
I mean, Sloane Stephens is your best shot. Serena Williams is going to win on anything. Yeah. I think Sloane is the same thing, also.
Yeah. And then the men just aren't there yet.
Yeah. There is no the man. Yeah. Is there? No, come on.
Yeah, he's not going to win the US Open. Although he played all right, though. He had some chances, but he couldn't get
played
it done.
Great, but he's played great a few times now. His great play is a quarterfinal, semifinal, Grand Slam player. And that's a huge, tremendous result for him, and there's nothing wrong with that. He's playing amazing, but he's going to run into the player who can get a few more returns in play. And
like a Del Potro.
Like a Del Potro, and then they're going to break him, and then that's it. If he gets broken, it's over.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly, and that's exactly what
happened. If he had a game where he could actually break people a little bit, then he could be super dangerous, and he could win on all surfaces. And truth be told, you know, he beat Federer in Switzerland Davis Cup on slow red clay. So, you know, Isner arguably plays better on a slower court.
No, and he does. Obviously, I think he's actually a good clay courter. But I think on a hard court, because he's not going to break anyways, maybe you want to give him as much of an advantage on the serve. I don't know. I mean, that's just my thoughts. But anyhow, we'll leave that to see what they do with it for next year. Already looking forward to the 19 event, which is going to be, it's always a good time. Anybody who met me down there will probably have already heard that from me. So anyways, Parsa, so as we move now to the men's final, which was held today, we had Novak Djokovic tying Pete Sampras for his 14th major, a guy who earlier this year, a lot of people said is done. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about because he's going to end the year number one. People are like, what? What are you talking about, man? The guy's like, whatever, he was 22 in the world at that time. I was like, yeah, just wait and see. I know he's losing to Taro Daniel and Benoit Paire and Chung and all these guys, but just, you know, wait, he's going to, and Cicinato and whatever, but he's going to find it because, you know, you knew that Nadal was kind of going to wear out. You knew that Federer can't keep up this level of play, he's turning 37. After that, who else is there? Murray is in major trouble. Wawrinka's playing all right. And then Zverev, as we saw, lost to Kohlschreiber. He still cannot get it done at the majors. Del Potro is there. Almost got it done today. Not almost, but he was there to give himself an opportunity. So I think that Djokovic, even though he's not at his absolute, absolute best, today he was pretty close. And I think that this bodes really well for him. And I mean, just what an amazing performance. I mean, Del Potro threw the kitchen sink at him, serving big, hammering forehands. And it was, you know, Parsa, for me, it was interesting because I was speaking to a couple of my colleagues earlier today. And what was up with Djokovic serving out wide to Del Potro's forehand, right? On the deuce side. And Novak doesn't have the best serve in the world, right? Like, he doesn't even have the best slice serve. But I mean, Del Potro is one of the guys he has to kind of set up, plant, and then hit his forehand, right? You can't do that as easily on a return, especially on a first serve. So Djokovic hitting these slice serves on the deuce side out wide, and Del Potro's basically getting caught off guard on a consistent basis. And it's like, what's going on there? Like, why wasn't he picking up on that? Why wasn't he shooting over a little bit more to give himself that opportunity? Because I think that irrespective of the planting and getting ready, he's got that eastern forehand, and you and I talked about that, right? Very convenient to hit a flatter ball off more of an eastern grip, especially on a first serve return, right? So why isn't he scooting over? And because he was getting caught so many times, and then what does that do? That exposes his backhand, right? Opens up the court, and then Djokovic is like, okay, no problem, man. You're getting it back. Now I want you to run into that corner and do something serious with your backhand. And that's not the easiest thing for him to do at this point, right?
Yeah, that's the answer for me is Del Potro needs to stay behind the baseline on the return to serve. And so when you stay further back, it opens the angle. Now the problem is that as it opens the angle, it opens the ability to get him on the run towards the backhand side. If he starts to go closer, now Djokovic will jam him with the serve into the backhand side, which his return is not as good on the backhand side. So they'll start to give some free points. And that's where Del Potro's real difficulty is right now coming back from these wrist injuries is that he doesn't have his backhand, although serviceable, you can see it's still kind of awkward when he's hitting it. It's not a clean shot. And, you know, he's not using his wrists at all and he's trying to keep it as solid as possible. But that's, I think, a function of where his health is right now. I think if he crowds the baseline like he should on the return to hammer these forehands to take away the angle, he then leaves himself vulnerable to the backhand side, to the serve that slices and jams him into the backhand. So I think that's the dilemma that he had. And also in the match, I just felt like he really couldn't take advantage of opportunities. They were the first set in a couple of games, Djokovic just lights out. There was just nothing he could do. Then Djokovic started to tighten up a little bit. He started to leave more balls in the middle of the court. Delpo had forehands to hit and to create opportunity, and he needed to be near perfect. And he was, like, very good today, but not near perfect. And that's just not good enough because Djokovic himself was near perfect. And on the other flip ends, you know, every match, I think I watched all seven or six of his seven matches, and out of the last four matches that I watched from Djokovic, each time I said, like, how's anyone going to beat this guy? He puts too many returns in play. Mm-hmm. Delpo's serving in the 70 percentile, and Djokovic got back 96% of his first serves. I mean, that's insanity. Like, how are you supposed to hit 127 long serve, and the guy hits it back to your feet? That's discouraging. You know, he's making you get into long rallies each and every time, yet he's holding serve relatively easily. So it's a bad formula for a tennis match, and it played out exactly like that.
And you know what the scary thing is, man? That he's still only 31. And he looks like he's in good shape right now. So this could be, like I was saying, this could become like this Djokovic vortex again, where he just sucks in all of these majors, and he just goes like 2011, and he just starts rolling people again. And it definitely could happen next year. And, you know, we thought that, you know, Nadal was going to do some damage. I had Djokovic winning the event, so thankfully I got that right. I was going to go with Delpo, but I thought that Nadal would do some damage. But that didn't work out, unfortunately, for him. He's probably going to be out for another month with some tendonitis in his knee. But I think he'll be okay. I think he'll be okay. But he's got a lot of work cut out for him because Djokovic is in such a good place right now, Parsa, because, you know, he has no points to defend for the end of the year. And he does so well in these events, in the Asian swing, even, you know, the Paris and the World Tour Finals. I think he's going to clean up. And I definitely think he's going to end number one. And then at the beginning of next year, he's got no points to defend, basically. So even if he doesn't somehow play that well in the second half of 19, which I would be shocked if that happens at this stage, he's still probably going to end, I think, minimum two in the world next year. You know what I'm saying? Like, so unless, I don't know, unless something like Zverev goes to the next level or one of these guys comes up, which is going to be really tough. Or Rafa can hold on, which I don't think he can. I think he's going to be maybe four or five next year, to be honest with you. I think he'll do his clay stuff. We'll get into that in later podcasts. But and then Federer, bit of a question mark for me right now too. But Federer plays well in the fall as well too. So especially for him because he hasn't won a tournament since Stuttgart, right? So he's going to want to try to do something in the next couple months. But yeah, I mean, I think overall, it was a pleasure to watch Djokovic this event, to be honest with you. I mean, because he just went to work and he figured it out. And, you know, Parsa, we talk about this a lot in majors, but he very nearly lost in round one to Fuchsowicz. And we don't talk about that very much, man. But it was like, what, a set all? He was down a break in the third, and it was like 104. And he looked like he was dying out there, right? But he got it together, somehow grinded through that match, and, you know, lo and behold, he's holding his third U.S. Open title and, you know, another $4 million in his account. I think he's at about $120 million in career prize money alone, and he's up to number three in the world as of tomorrow. And just watch out, man, because he's coming in fierce. And I think that's going to be pretty much for me on the Djokovic front. You have anything to wrap up on the Serb before we head out for this week?
No, I mean, I thought it was an awesome U.S. Open. All of us in our family are sad that the U.S. Open's over.
Yes.
Right there. And, yeah, it's just it's awesome and sort of the end of the year again. It's crazy. But we go into the quote-unquote obsolete, dare I say, fall season to where we lose the casual fan and we lose the sort of casual fan and we only get the diehard or hardcore guys that are probably listening to and women who are listening to our podcast and ourselves, we're back to a small group that's following the tour, but it's all good, and we'll revisit the public in Australia.
Yeah, you got it, man. Okay, so everybody out there, make sure to hit up Parsa at ParsaSammy, as well as on Twitter and Instagram. For myself, I'll be at Davis Cup next weekend. We got a tie here in Toronto versus the Netherlands. The week after that, I'll be in Chicago for the Laver Cup. And then next month, you can check me out on social media. I'm going to be actually the tournament director of four events in the Caribbean for the Caribbean Cup Series, which is a very exciting new venture for myself. And then Parsa and I will be back next month to preview the Shanghai Rolex Masters. See how that goes, and then after that we'll get to Paris, World Tour Finals, and then take about 5 or 6, 7 weeks off, and then get ready for the Australian Open. With that said, Parsa, thank you so much for joining us this week, my friend.
Thank you.
Thanks everybody out there for being a part of our great U.S. Open coverage again. A lot of, you know, fantastic people that we've met over the fortnight. Thank you to all of you. It's been amazing. I mean, obviously, as you know, I'm into it. I'm ready for everything. I'm ready for next week's Davis Cup and the Laver Cup. I'm excited for everything. So make sure to hit us up on all of our different channels. Make sure to download this podcast on iTunes. And finally, for anybody looking to get down to any of the fall events or the Australian Open right at the beginning of 2019, make sure to hit up Grand Slam. Again, thank you. Be good. And we shall speak.